I'm very much someone who believes that vulnerability gets you very far in life in general, not just within the workplace, but and questions certainly go hand in hand with that because you have to have some sort of comfort in being vulnerable to even voice those questions in the first place. Expressing and showcasing when you're wrong or expressing like, oh, I made this mistake are such a key component also for leadership because no one wants to have someone who feels like some infallible leader who knows what to do and is just directing things. You want someone who is showcasing that they can be wrong. It's okay to be wrong.
And welcome to CMO Convo. I'm Michal Assman, your host and a global marketing leader. Today, we're joined with Annie Furlong, a marketing leader, CUP member, and builder of niche communities in the B2B2C space. Annie, welcome to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yeah. So Annie, before we kind of like jump into today's topic, which is B2B2B strategies, would you mind sharing a bit of information about your background and maybe a bit on your career journey?
Yeah. So the vast majority of my career has really been within the healthcare space in some capacity, usually more on the business side of healthcare, I always say. So not actually the one helping to deliver the care to patients and individuals. But rather thinking about engagement strategies, how we're reaching our end users, whether that be hospital executives or individual patients who have access to certain kind of specialty care benefits, which is the world in which I live today. But ultimately, you know, it's been quite a journey. And I think professional development is also something I'm incredibly passionate about, but have done everything from the large publicly traded companies that work in healthcare consulting to then entering a little bit more into the trade association and then ultimately the startup space where I've been the last close to a decade. And it's been quite a fun journey in and of itself there. So also a bit of a startup passionate person about startups as well.
Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing. So, Annie, I know that you've also created a niche community in the B2B2C space. And I would love to learn what kind of like stood up to you when you started like focusing in this whole environment of the B2B2C.
Yeah. Well, I first got interested in creating this community, our B2B2C collective, ultimately because I found there's just not a really strong community out there. I think there's a lot on for B2B marketers, also direct-to-consumer marketers. But then this B2B2C space is a very niche world that so many of us live in. And ultimately, just started organically getting folks interested. And a lot of the different challenges that we all face are pretty similar across the board, where it's everything from how do we get clients to ultimately say yes to opening the doors to reaching out directly to their employee audiences? Because ultimately they hold the keys to kind of reaching out and ultimately trying to get to those end consumers. So we're always thinking, one, how are we even structuring our teams internally? How we're supporting and working with our CS counterparts to also how we're building content and being able to customize or personalize to these employer partners and ultimately reaching their employees in a scalable way. And it's been very interesting. A lot of us tend to be in the startup space within this community. And it's also been interesting to kind of see the different evolution from folks who are in maybe more early stage to mid stage to strong growth stage. And then ultimately even folks who have recently IPO'd. So we've all are kind of learning from each other and sharing best practices and resources and what seems to resonate. I think the key piece is that so many of our executives are always looking for that silver bullet, which is probably true for any segment of marketing across the board. However, for us, it's always about how do we ultimately reach them
through a number of different channels, a number of different ongoing communications. And ultimately, the silver bullet is that there is no silver bullet, and that it's ongoing evergreen communications, as we all know so well.
Yeah. So would you mind also sharing a bit of the challenges or the differentiation between B2B to B2C in the type of strategies?
Yeah. So with the B2B market, you at least, I'd say your audience is perhaps more focused. You know typically who your buyer is, individually and specifically, then what's their title, what's the type of company perhaps that you're focused on. And certainly there are other players, for example, within our healthcare space. There's not just the benefits buyers and those HR leaders, but then there are also benefits consultants and sometimes also then healthcare providers and healthcare insurers. I'm within the U.S. market, so it gets even more complex sometimes within healthcare. But then within the B2C space, then it's really about how do we really kind of focus on the individual? And there's a completely varied range, I should say, for backgrounds of individuals. So within the B2B to C space, it's really about unlocking the keys and getting the keys from the employer so that they then allow us to market directly to all of their end employees. And it very much then depends upon, is this a company that has people distributed across the country? Are they people who are sitting at their computers all day? And so reaching them might look very different than someone who is working on a factory floor, frontline worker every day. And how we're grabbing, catching their eyeballs is so different depending upon the type of employer, the type of employee. Where do they live? Are they in a rural community? Are they in an urban community? Education level, especially when dealing with healthcare. Healthcare literacy is a whole other challenge and beast. And so there's so many different factors you're having to kind of fold into the mix versus I think within B2B, hopefully, it's a little more straightforward. At least you don't have quite the varied audience. So that is where the personalization and being able to try to do that in a more scalable way is so important. And then also having tools in your toolbox that allow you to try to figure out in a more scalable way how to speak to those different populations and ultimately how we can grab their attention.
Yeah. Yeah, 100% agree. Thank you very much for clarifying that. I would love to talk a bit about healthcare in marketing, because I think that it is a category of its own. And since you're such an experienced marketer in that field, would you mind sharing a bit about how does healthcare really differ when we're looking on different industries in marketing?
Yeah, well, within the U.S. healthcare market in particular, I always joke that there will always be a startup community within healthcare in the U.S. because we have perhaps dug ourselves in such a hole as a country for how our healthcare is delivered and paid for. Ultimately, at Carrum, for example, we would love to not even be in business in reality. We would love for the healthcare system to just operate in the way that we are trying to make it operate. But, within healthcare in particular, it's trying to make sure people understand what ultimately you're trying to say and what you're offering to them. There's so many niche types of healthcare. Also, when your services and offerings are continuously expanding too, how do you redefine yourself a little bit as well? For example, at Carrum Health, a few years ago, we were really just focused on surgery care. Then we added cancer care. Now we're adding substance use disorder and a whole other host of other specialty care areas. However, if I were to just say, we're your specialty care provider, that might not make sense to so many people at the end user level. And so having to figure out a way to almost translate that, especially because I always think of healthcare as a whole other language sometimes. And so having to figure out how you can translate that so that it makes sense to the end user and what does it mean for them? I think that's always the name of the game, certainly for anyone in marketing and whoever their audience is. But ultimately, how are we saving them money? How are we making sure they're getting the best possible care? How are we taking out any sort of worry and headache or as much as possible to make their lives just that much easier? And I think just trying to navigate explaining all of that to someone, you almost feel sometimes like you have to boil the ocean in a single message. But figuring out what are the things and testing out too, what are the things that people seem to care about and what resonates most with them. And for our instance, for example, at Carum Health, it's really, we know that cost and quality are the name of the game for what individuals really care about most when it comes to their healthcare and what's going to grab their attention.
Yeah. And out of curiosity, are there any lessons learned specifically for your job in healthcare?
Probably a lot. I think it's that, just people consume information in so many different ways. You know, we are an employer benefit. So the way that people even have access to us is purely as long as their employer offers us as a benefit, as part of their overall benefits package as an employee, or if they're a dependent, for example, of someone who works at one of the companies that offers Carum as a benefit. So I think for us, it's some people are really attuned to what's in their benefits package. Some only pay attention to the monthly or quarterly email that their HR benefits team sends out to them, or some are walking through the back room of their location of that work, and they see a flyer or a digital screen, and there's something there that resonates with them. I think, especially with healthcare, everyone is at a different stage in their healthcare journey at any time. So we can't rely on, launch communications one time a year. It has to be throughout the year in different channels across the board. So having different things, for example, we have our broad communications that are going directly to those employees, to everyone who has access to the benefit. Then we also have things like geo-targeted programs, automated programs. We have healthcare claims-based programs. There's so many different ways so that we're capturing people and grabbing their eyeballs, hopefully when it is most relevant to them, or in a way that is also most relevant or most eye-catching to them. Because we know some people don't understand from reading an email what this benefit is all about. And instead, a 1-minute video might be the better way to help them understand what their benefit is. Or it might just be, hey, give us a call and you can learn more and speak to a human being and kind of dive in there. So there's so many different ways that people can absorb information and understand it. And so how we can really kind of put it into terms that it makes sense for them, because it's not like when, for me, for example, me as a marketer, I'm going to know exactly, what this tool is that someone is sending me a promotional email or something about. That is hyper relevant to my world. Within healthcare, it's, maybe today I don't need any sort of knee surgery, but perhaps in 6 months or 8 months, something happens and I need to then remember, I have this benefit available to me. And so that recall becomes so much more important, which is why building trust through content and just making sure that your brand is something people recognize, so that when the time comes where they actually need that benefit and that offering, they remember that you're there and that you're available for them.
Yeah, it sounds to me as if there's also a connection between trust and the emotional level, right? So there is a lot of emotions that are involved when we're talking about healthcare provider, and also because it's such, it's very subjective, I would say, as well. As you said, everyone is on a different, path in their healthcare journey. So very interesting. Thank you very much for sharing. And I would love to move forward to another topic that you're very passionate about, which is professional development. I think that 2025 is being very much kind of like coined in the personal development here, especially with the rise of AI and everything. But I would love to hear from you, and especially for our audience, how can marketeers who feel that maybe they have been plateaued or maybe they want to move forward with their career, what would you kind of like recommend them as the first step in their personal development journey?
Honestly, I think just asking questions, and that means both of themselves, I would say, of figuring out what it is that actually you're most interested in. But then people who maybe you admire or even whose jobs pique their interest, asking them questions, setting up time, trying to just purely learn more. It doesn't have to be with the intention of you might have a job for me right now. It might be that I'm trying to figure out what even is that end job that could be of interest to me down the line. I think also figuring out, I would always joke that my 20s were for figuring out what I didn't want to do in my career. And then 30s was really where I had figured out those pieces that I don't want to do as much as possible. And then really focusing in on in this next decade of what I want to be doing and setting on that path. But I always say as well, the more you can just be open to new experiences and trying things out, the more you're then going to learn and figure out. It just adds more tools in your toolbox to figure out what it is that you're passionate about and that you enjoy doing day to day. There's always going to be components to any job, any role that aren't your favorite pieces of every day. However, making sure that at least at the end of the day, you are enjoying what you're doing and are feeling some sort of creativity and passion. Obviously, those are very privileged things to be able to feel in your work. But it's such a great opportunity to be able to have that as part of my world. But I think just as folks are figuring out what they want to be doing, being open to things and being willing to try. I mean, I certainly remember, I think probably when I was 23 or 24, and I had a couple of leaders within my company at the time who said, "Annie, we would love to try out just for 6 months, essentially you doing, you know, reporting to two individuals and kind of doing this hybrid type role. And we'll touch base at the end of 6 months and see how it's going, but obviously have an ongoing conversation as well." And I said, "Yeah, let's try it." Ultimately, I had come to the conclusion that this is two whole jobs that I'm trying to fit into one job. But then I was able to have that honest conversation and kind of select the route. And I learned so much about a whole other field or a whole other segment of the business that I wouldn't have otherwise learned. But I do think that questions ultimately are the name of the game for anything. And okay. I think of that not just in your professional development, but also making sure for any sort of project or task you're working on, it allows you to make sure you're doing it the right way, or just so many ways that you can waste time and energy if you just don't ask clarifying questions or dive in with curiosity, especially. Those are the kind of key pieces that I always encourage people. And I think the more questions you ask, the more confident you become in being able to speak up and ask those questions further and ultimately make it feel like it's a culture of learning for your peers and for your direct reports and whoever it might be. And it inspires other people to then continue to do that as well.
Yeah, I 100% agree. By the way, have you ever read the book Change Your Questions, Change Your Life?
No, but I'm going to write that down. I need to.
It's a whole theory around like questioning thinking. So how do you develop that, you know, perspective of constantly being curious, not making assumption, right? And then looking and observing on the situation and asking, okay, what's possible now? What are the other people thinking, feeling? What will be the next step to support everyone? And just a very lovely book that I think really cater into your approach. So I think that you would love and enjoy reading that.
Excited to check it out.
Cool. And I would love to ask, out of your leadership experience, if there was like any specific approach or practice that you know of that really, that you saw that really make your team grow? I mean, yes, you've mentioned the whole question thinking, let's bring it that way, but is there any other frame of thought that might support here?
Yeah, I'm very much someone who believes that vulnerability gets you very far in life in general, not just within the workplace, but I think, and questions certainly go hand in hand with that, because you have to have some sort of comfort in being vulnerable to even voice those questions in the first place. But I think in expressing and showcasing when you're wrong, or and expressing like, oh, I made this mistake, or things along those lines are such a key component also for leadership, because no one wants to have someone who feels like some infallible leader who knows what to do and is just directing things. You want someone who is showcasing that they can be wrong. It's okay to be wrong. And bringing that, I think for me, I'm very much, I think this is probably why startups appeal to me so significantly, is that there is no, this is how we always did it, because the foundation of what you are even doing as a company, there has not been done, most likely, or not at least in the way that you are doing it. And so I think when you bring that mindset to your individual role as well, of how can we be doing something differently, or hey, I have this idea, and just creating that space for your team, whether that's your direct reports, your peer group, or other people within your team that you're working with, and showcasing those types of ideas. Especially if you ever feel like perhaps someone comes to you with not a great idea, come responding with questions and curiosity and trying to understand versus making assumptions about what they were thinking or what their goals were or whatever it might be, but coming instead with those questions, that curiosity, and not coming from a place of assumptions. I think that will serve people in any role at any level throughout their career.
Yeah, and you've mentioned vulnerability. Would you mind maybe defining what does it mean? Because I think that, you know, there are like these phrases like authenticity, vulnerability, but what does that actually mean in practice?
I think it's just willing to showcase that you don't know the answer. Or don't know the whole answer even, and being comfortable in that. I think making sure that people understand that it's also okay to not know the answer, because otherwise, you know, you can be then having a whole, you can have fear to speak up. You could have fear that you're asking a dumb question, so to speak, or something along those lines. And then you might just keep it closed to yourself. I feel so often in my career early on, I would be sitting in a meeting and not feel comfortable wanting to speak up and showcase that vulnerability of maybe what I have to say is not a good idea or not creative or just purely a bad idea. And someone else at the table would speak up and say that and get a lot of praise, or, oh, that was such a great idea, person. And I'm like, oh, I'm kicking myself so many times for not just having some vulnerability and being willing to speak up and showcase. And I think through that, and probably through that happening many times, I realized, okay, it's time to speak up. Your idea might be a bad one, but it might not be, or part of it might be a great idea, and not the whole thing, but no one's going to know, and no one's going to know your thinking and showcasing your skills and your talents if you're not going to be comfortable enough and vulnerable enough to put yourself in a position where you can then speak up and feel comfortable to do so. So for me, I think it's really just about being able to kind of put yourself out there and not knowing how it might be received and being comfortable with taking that risk.
Yeah, 100% agree. It sounds also linked to having confidence, right? Also to admitting maybe you didn't go as I expected, and that's, yeah, like hold accountability for that. Yeah, so sparkle up my end. So thank you very much for sharing.
Yeah, it's like a muscle too. I really feel like the more you do it, the more comfortable you feel in doing it, because the more you take those risks, the more you realize this actually isn't super scary, or you're not going to get some horrific response. And maybe if you do, that's a showcase that that's not the team you want to be on, or under the leader, or at the company and the culture that you feel like is right for you. And so I think those are things that can really help learn and steer you in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Thank you very much for sharing. So I would love to raise the topic of AI, because we have to talk about AI. We all know
that. Of course.
Prior to our episode, you've mentioned that you have a bit of skepticism into the reliability and the time that it actually takes to start working with AI. Would you mind sharing a bit of information about your point of view?
Yeah. You know, I think, and there's so many segments within marketing in particular, I would say that AI is further along than perhaps it is in one area versus another. However, like, for example, I think within the personalization within an email platform, for example, that is likely much further ahead, and testing out subject lines and shorter copy or CTAs, things along those lines in a scalable way, and getting those answers so much more quickly, I think is in a totally different world than perhaps where content marketing is, and how AI can aid in that subsegment of marketing. So I think, and so many executives these days are just, well, how can we do AI? What's AI? And I also think the level of and size of company as well that you're in, and the level at which your company is adopting things enterprise-wide, I think also makes a huge difference, especially because so much you know, there's a lot of fear of putting things into, for example, ChatGPT, that then you don't want to put anything proprietary, for example, into something like that. However, I know plenty of people who work at larger organizations who have a closed system type, Google Gemini or ChatGPT, where they're safely kind of asking questions or putting in data or whatever it might be in a way that they know it will not then be put out into the internet for anyone to potentially come across. So I think there's so many factors that come into play here when it comes to AI as a tool. I think of it as kind of the entry-level contractor, perhaps, that is on your team, but I don't see it being able to replace jobs, at least not quite yet. Not within marketing, I should say. So I think just there are so many tools, and there's so many things too that you need to ask, and also a lot of things might claim to be easy to integrate. However, they might be way more intensive than others, and just take up a lot of internal bandwidth, perhaps with your engineering or your product teams. And so those are all factors that I think people just don't think about when it comes to the ease of adopting AI. So I think that there's just there's a lot that needs to be done. I do think the name of the game really needs to just be piloting different tools in a safe space. I have a team member who had a great way of putting it, also of just having a beginner's mindset when it comes to AI. And I think that also is a very scary thing for so many people, especially folks who might be later on in their careers or just not right at the beginning of their careers. And so feeling comfortable and testing things out, because it is something that we do need to start utilizing, factoring in, thinking about. It can be things that can ultimately save a lot of time. I think from an organization project management standpoint, that is absolutely helping, being able to get things done in a more time efficient way, and also keep things organized. But for me, when it comes to AI, it's just about at least not running at every sort of shiny object, but rather thinking about what are the ways in which you could maybe be more efficient on your team? What are ways that we could spend less time doing manual things that could be automated? What, for example, could your copywriting team or your content team use a entry-level copywriter, and thinking about the tool in that regard, or a way to kind of drive simple testing at scale. So I think there's just a lot of, it depends upon what your team and your company's priorities are, but then also what are those challenges where you feel like we're spending a lot of time on XYZ that feels like perhaps we could work smarter while we're working harder and not just working harder. So I think those are kind of the things, at least how I'm trying to approach it, and truly thinking about, okay, what are tools that we might want to pilot and figure out, and making sure that your executive team in particular knows this is not a permanent tool necessarily. Maybe it becomes one, but these are things that we need to test out first to see, are they even worth it? Are they even what they claim to be in the hype? Or is it just going to be an extra shiny tool in the toolbox that actually you seldom use or get little value out of?
Yeah. No, 100% agree. I think that the key is the piloting. The piloting and then scaling, and not kind of like just going full in, doing, you know, massive or let's say disruptive steps, and then realizing, oh, okay, that actually didn't work as we expected. So kind of like trying to, yeah, understand what is feasible and what is maybe not quite there yet. So 100% agree with your AI skepticism. Thank you very much for bringing it in. So we're coming to the end of the episode, Annie, and I do have my last question for you, which is, out of all of the challenges and changes that we've talked about today, what excites you most about being a marketer right now? And also with the outlook of 2026, which is literally just around the corner.
I know. I think this is something that maybe not even hyper relevant to it being 2025, 2026, but I think something that is what drew me to marketing in the first place and keeps me loving working in marketing is that it changes so often. I think the core principles are still remain the same and what you're focused on. However, the tools and technology and the new ways of doing things and testing things out is always changing. And sometimes the channels are also kind of changing to a certain extent, or what folks are paying attention to. So I think those are the things that are kind of evergreen challenges, but that keep it fun and interesting for sure. But I think when it comes to what I'm also most excited for, I think really when I think of the stage of company that my company is currently in, and it's hyper growth and very exciting. I think there's so much that is at our fingertips. And I also think marketing increasingly, I think, just has more and more clout these days, especially when it comes to being able to showcase more clearly and connect those dots across your ecosystem. And I think some of those AI tools actually are ways that you can help connect those dots and more explicitly prove marketing's value. And I think in the past, sometimes that attribution or different things could really be harder to showcase, or you'd have to have a lot of maybe heavy tech in place to be able to showcase it, where now you can showcase not just maybe direct attribution, but influencing and all of these kind of components. I always remind our clients as well as internal folks that the marketing kind of rule of seven, people have to see things, you know, seven times or hear about them before they actually make that decision to move forward. And I always joke, that's as it relates to probably buying a pair of tennis shoes, not deciding to go with your company for their healthcare, their knee surgery or their cancer care journey versus their health insurance, their traditional health insurance path. So I think, what those different challenges are always kind of interesting and relevant, and keep it interesting as well of what's going to resonate with folks. But I think just there's so much ahead, and that we're finally, I think marketing more and more is getting the credit it deserves for sure. And so that makes me really excited, because it also then opens up, I think, a lot of opportunities for my team, for people on my team, for other folks to understand the value of it and all of the hard work that we're doing every day. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you so much, Annie. That has been such a great conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. It was a great talk.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of CMO Convo. If you enjoyed this episode, leave us a rating and review on your preferred platform. Don't forget to tune in next week for another insightful conversation with a leading CMO.